It's that moon again. Slung so fat and low in the tropical night, calling out across the curdled sky and into the quivering ears of that dear old voice in the shadows. The dark passenger nestled snug in the back seat of the Dodge K-car of Dexter's hypothetical soul. That rascal moon, that loud-mouthed, leering Lucifer, calling down across the empty sky to the dark hearts of the night monsters below, calling them away to their joyful playgrounds. Calling, in fact, to that monster right there. Behind the oleander, tiger-striped with moonlight through the leaves, his senses on all high as he waits for just the right moment to leap from the shadows. It is Dexter, in the dark, listening to the terrible whispered suggestions that come pouring down breathlessly into my shadowed hiding place. My dear dark other self urges me to pounce. Now, sink my moonlit fangs into the oh-so-vulnerable flesh on the fat side of the hedge. But the time is not right, and so I wait, watching cautiously as my unsuspecting victim creeps past. Eyes wide, knowing that something is watching, but not knowing that I am here, only 3 steely feet away in the hedge. I could so easily slide out like the knife blade I am and work my wonderful magic. But I wait, suspected but unseen. 1 long, stealthy moment tiptoes into another, and still I wait for just the right time. The leap, the outstretched hand, the cold glee as I see the terror spread across the face of my victim. But no. Something is not right. No, it is Dexter's turn to feel the queasy prickling of eyes on his back, the flutter of fear as I become more certain that something is now haunting me. Some other night stalker is feeling the sharp interior drool as he watches me from somewhere nearby. And I do not like this thought. And like a small clap of thunder, the gleeful hand comes down out of nowhere and onto me, blindingly fast, and I glimpse the gleaming teeth of a 9-year-old neighbor boy.
Gotcha! 1, 2, 3 on Dexter!
And with the savage speed of the very young, the rest of them are there, giggling wildly and shouting at me as I stand in the bushes humiliated. It is over. 6-year-old Cody stares at me, disappointed, as though Dexter the night god has let down his high priest. Aster, his 9-year-old sister, joins in the hooting of the kids before they skitter off into the dark once more, to new and more complicated hiding places, leaving me so very alone in my shame. And Dexter did not kick the can. And now Dexter is it again. You may wonder, how can this be?
How can Dexter's night hunt be reduced to this? Always before, there has been some frightful twisted predator awaiting the special attention of frightful twisted Dexter. And here I am, stalking an empty Chef Boyardee ravioli can that is guilty of nothing worse than bland sauce. Here I am, frittering away precious time, losing a game I have not played since I was 10. Even worse, I am it. One, two, three, I call out, ever the fair and honest gamesman. How can this be? How can Dexter the demon feel the weight of that moon and not be off among the entrails, slicing life from someone who needs very badly to feel the edge of Dexter's keen judgment? How is it possible on this kind of night for the cold Avenger to refuse to take the dark passenger out for a spin? 4, 5, 6. Harry, my wise foster father, had taught me the careful balance of need and knife. He had taken a boy in whom he saw the unstoppable need to kill. No changing that. And Harry had molded him into a man who only killed the killers. Dexter, the no-blood hound, who hid behind a human, seemingly face, and tracked down the naughty, the truly naughty serial killers who killed without code. And I would have been one of them, if not for the hairy plan. There are plenty of people who deserve it, Dexter, my wonderful foster cop father had said. 7, 8, 9. He had taught me how to find these special playmates, how to be sure that they deserved a social call from me and my dark passenger. And even better, he taught me how to get away with it, as only a cop could teach. He had helped me to build a plausible hidey hole of a life and drummed into me that I must fit in, always, and be relentlessly normal in all things. And so I had learned how to dress neatly and smile and brush my teeth. I had become a perfect fake human being, saying the stupid and pointless things that humans say to each other all day long. No one suspected what crouched behind my perfect imitation smile. No one except my foster sister, Deborah, of course. But she wasn't coming to accept the real me. After all, I could have been much worse. I could have been a vicious, raving monster who killed, and left towers of rotting flesh in my wake. Instead, here I was, on the side of the truth, justice, in the American way. Still a monster, of course, but that cleaned up nicely afterward. And I was our monster, dressed in red, white, and blue, 100% synthetic virtue. And on those nights, when the moon is loudest, I find the others, those who prey on the innocent and do not play by the rules, and I make them go away in small, carefully wrapped pieces. this elegant formula had worked well through years of happy inhumanity. In between playdates, I maintained my perfectly average lifestyle from a persistently ordinary apartment. I was never late to work. I made the right jokes with co-workers, and I was useful and unobtrusive in all things, just as Harry had taught me. My life as an android was neat, balanced, and had real redeeming social value. Until now. Somehow, here I was, on a just right night, playing kick the can with a flock of children, instead of playing slice the slasher with a carefully chosen friend. And in a little while, when the game was over, I would take Cody and Aster into their mother, Rita's, house. And she would bring me a can of beer, tuck the kids into bed, and sit beside me on the couch. How could this be? Was the dark passenger slipping into early retirement? Had Dexter mellowed? Had I somehow turned the corner of the long dark hall and come out on the other wrong end as Dexter domestic? Would I ever again place that one drop of blood on the neat glass slide as I always did? My trophy from the hunt. 10! Ready or not, here I come! Yes, indeed. Here I came. But to what? It started, of course, with Sergeant Doakes. Every superhero must have an arch enemy, and he was mine. I had done absolutely nothing to him, and yet he had chosen to hound me, harry me from my good work, me in my shadow. And the irony of it, me, a hard-working, blood-spatter patterned analyst for the very same police force that employed him. We were on the same team. Was it fair for him to pursue me like this, merely because every now and then I did a little bit of moonlighting? I knew Sergeant Doakes far better than I really wanted to. Much more than just from our professional connection. I had made it my business to find out about him for one simple reason. He had never liked me, in spite of the fact that I take great pride in being charming and cheerful on a world-class level. But it almost seemed like Doakes could tell. It was all fake. All my handmade hardiness bounced off him like June bugs off a windshield. This naturally made me curious. I mean, really, what kind of person could possibly dislike me? And so, I had studied him just a little. And I found out the kind of person who could possibly dislike debonair Dexter was 48, African American, and held the department's record for the bench press. According to the casual gossip I had picked up, he was an army vet and since coming to the department, had been involved in several fatal shootings, all of which internal affairs had judged to be righteous. But more important than this, I had discovered firsthand that somewhere behind the deep anger that always burned in his eyes, there lurked an echo of a chuckle from my very own dark passenger. It was just a tiny little chime of a very small bell, but I was sure Dokes was sharing space with something, just like I was. Not the same thing, but something very similar. A panther to my tiger. Dokes was a cop, but he was also a cold killer. I had no real proof of this, but I was as sure as I could be without seeing him crush a jaywalker's larynx. Reasonable being might think that he and I could find some common ground, have a cup of coffee, and compare our passengers, exchange charade talk and chit-chat about dismemberment techniques. But no. Dokes wanted me dead, and I found it difficult to share his point of view. Dokes had been working with Detective Legordo at the time of her somewhat suspicious death, and since then his feelings toward me had grown to be a bit more active than simple loathing. And Dokes was convinced that I had something to do with LaGuardia's death. This was totally untrue and completely unfair. All I had done was watch. Where's the harm in that? Of course, I had helped the real killer escape. But what could you expect? What kind of person would turn in his own brother? Especially when he did such neat work. Well, live and let live, I always say. Or quite often, anyway. Sergeant Dokes could think what he wanted to think, and that was fine with me. There are still very few laws against thinking, although I'm sure they're working hard on that in Washington. No. Whatever suspicions the good sergeant had about me, he was welcome to them. But now that he had decided to act on his impure thoughts, my life was a shambles. Dexter Derailed was fast becoming Dexter Demented. And why? How had this whole nasty mess begun? All I had done was try to be myself.